let's get started today. I'm super excited. Kind of a little bit out of our norm when we come to guests, but I want to welcome everybody into the podcast and or video cast. I don't even know what we call this now since we're doing video and audio, so it's a little bit different still. We're still playing with the format. We're still trying to get used to it through fire engineering. I love the ideas. So hopefully we'll have this mastered after another couple runs at it. So as always, we're going to start off with our intros. Excuse me. I'm Todd Edwards, 31 years of Atlanta Fire Rescue. Operate a small train company now. Very fortunate, very blessed to get to travel to a lot of really cool places. Get to teach alongside, guys like our guests, our co-host Anthony, and so many incredible people. So let's kick it off with that. And Captain Rowett, your intro, please.
Anthony Rowett. I'm a captain with the Mobile Fire Rescue Department in Mobile, Alabama. Been here for 15 years, 3 years volunteering in New Jersey prior to that. Like Todd, a small training company, get to travel the country with guys like Todd, our guest tonight, and a bunch of people that we both share friends with, and just blessed to be able to do both of them.
Awesome. Awesome. Well, and I'd say usually some, I guess with the old audio, with just audio, nobody knew who we were really going to talk to, but since his face plastered up here, we're just going to let him introduce himself. Go ahead, sir.
Fellas, thank you for having me, first off. But Jeremy with National Fire Radio, going on 30 years in the fire service, career volunteer, man. Like, I grew up as a volunteer fireman. I'm still a volunteer fireman. Had every opportunity to get on the job, but a family business kept me from that. And so we started National Fire Radio about 6 years ago now, as my way to leave legacy and give back to the fire service. And I haven't looked back, man. This has been a wild ride, and I get to be on the show tonight, man. So thanks for having me.
We had Corley Moore on, and since both of you do these, obviously with National Fire Radio, and Corley with the weekly scrap and all the stuff he's doing, it's kind of a little bit of turn of the tables for you to have us asking you questions and giving your feedback on the fire service from what I think is a unique perspective. And that's one of the reasons I was super excited when we were talking about this this past weekend about having you on. So let me start with just kind of a softball thing. What department are you still with? You're good.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah, absolutely. Franklin Lakes, New Jersey, Bergen County, which is about 25 minutes outside of New York City. All volunteer department, home response, 700 nice. Runs a year, no medical. It's a lot
still,
of fun, man.
You still have to be pretty active with your...
brother, I love going to fires, man. Like, I still do. I truly do. Like, there's something about it for me that, like, it's, when it's time to go, it's time to go. And the majority of the stuff that we do is repetitive, and a lot of it is false alarms and smells and bells and things like that. But when we do capture the work, and I'd say like our hometown department between home games and away games, probably doing about 25 fires a year. I mean, that could be anything from room and contents to, large scale fires. But, it's when we do catch them, or we catch something quickly, or we get a wreck or something where it all goes to, it all pays off. Meaning all the hard work for the volunteers that they put in. I mean, we have a very dedicated group, and, they put a lot of time in. And I think that's the story for a lot of volunteer departments across the country. And it's a lot of preparation for not a lot of action, if you will. And so when it is game time, it's nice to see the guys and girls perform and perform well. And that's what matters most.
I know I use that a lot in the classes, and I know I've heard Anthony say this. But at the end of the day, and I know we even had this conversation this weekend, the fire doesn't care if you're a volunteer. The fire doesn't care if you're part-time. The fire doesn't have any care if you're having a bad day. And the citizens don't give a shit about it either.
Well, and for me, truthfully, like what I firmly believe in is that the level of service needs to be consistent across the board. The people that we serve, the residents, the visitors to our municipality, the when we go out of town and provide our services and do what we do, they don't care who you are. They have an unconditional belief and faith that we're going to deliver professional service in a timely manner. And so it doesn't matter where you come from or what patch you have on your arm or what title it is. The public just doesn't care. And frankly, the fire or the emergency no, we're going to certainly doesn't
care. I think our public, I was having a conversation recently where Anthony grew up at. I had the privilege of teaching up in his area a couple years ago. And that public expects the same out of those guys as if they were living in, you know, downtown Manhattan, or if they're living in Harlem, or if they're living in Atlanta,
that's
Georgia,
right.
They have the same expectations. And I kind of want to spin that back around to Anthony. We kind of went down this little path here. How is from your time growing up in your small department there in the Jersey area compared to it now, Anthony?
I think it honestly actually set me up for success in my career, because they're a very, very prideful fire department. They don't do a lot of work. As they say, bedrock doesn't burn. So they don't do a lot of fires at home. They go away for most of them. But they really take pride in what they do, making sure they train right, they operate right, and they really care about performance. And they care about traditions. So that was two things that were really embedded in me early, was performance and tradition, and making sure things were passed on. So once I did get on the job, those things were already very strong values for me. That small, very slow fire department ingrained in me was training, the traditions, and that it was all about the performance, and that they took a lot of pride in it. So I don't think it comes down to always the busy versus the slow, the volunteer versus career. What it really comes down to is the values. No matter where you're from, if those values line up, the success is going to happen. You could be the busiest company in the world, but if you don't care about how well you perform, you're probably not going to perform that well. You're just going to go to a lot of work, do what you do and be done with it, versus someone that really puts the time in and cares. So, and especially because I got on the job so young, I mean, I hired in at 19. It's really easy to just be a kid at that point and not understand where you fit into things. And I still didn't. I mean, I had to learn, and the guys took care of that. You guys met the guy that he taught me my way this weekend. But he molded my career by doing that. But a lot of it starts in Ogdensburg, New Jersey, where they ingrained those values that once I learned my way and I learned the way things work on the job, I was able to find success because I understood, like, okay, these guys got 30 and 40 years. I need to get as much from them as I can. They're not going to be here forever to just guide me. I need to learn from them before they leave. And I did. I mean, one of my biggest mentors just retired at the end of December, Bubba Vosheh. I mean, he's one of the most respected guys in our job. You guys met him at the hot class last year. He was the one with his arm in a sling. And then when we took you to a job, Jeremy, he was there too with his arm in a sling watching. But he was one of the most respected guys on our jobs. And man, I honestly, from the time I got on the job, the way people talked about him, I treasured every fire I went to with him. We were on different shifts, so it was either I was working overtime or he was. And if I made a fire with him, I treasured it, because it was like, you know, he doesn't have much time left. He's one of the best we've got, but you learn something from him at every single fire. And one of the biggest things I learned wasn't just, man, he's a badass fireman or all that. He was just a pure leader. People followed him. He didn't have to say it. He didn't have to tell anybody he was the leader. You just knew. It was the way he carried himself. And I learned that starting where I grew up, like, man, the traditions. And this guy, his dad was on the job. His dad actually got paralyzed on the job. Not fully, but the engine got hit by a train. And so he had a lot of, you know, just the fire department, the brotherhood took care of him, you know, coming up as a kid. And he still loved the fire department, got on. And man, guys like him, Mike Smith, these senior guys, when I came on, because of the way I was brought up of what the fire service is, I didn't necessarily like stay with the younger guys, which would have been easy. I was drawn to be with those senior guys and try to learn as much as I could from them. And that started where I grew up.
I'd love to double down on what you're saying, because like one of the proud achievements is, as I'm putting in almost 30 years in my volunteer fire department, I look at how many career firefighters we put out time and time again. I mean, I can't even begin to tell you or list how many guys in my 30 years have gone on to some of the biggest and best departments across the country. And I think what's really exciting for that is that speaks to the culture from which you come. We laid the foundation for 16 and 18 year old kids to come into a firehouse that they probably know nothing about unless they're a legacy firefighter and maybe grew up in the firehouse like I did, right? I grew up there because of my father. But you have other kids that come in that don't know anything about the fire service, and they spend a few short years before they go off to college or come back from college in between, whatever it is. But we've ingrained and instilled in them these traditions and a love and passion for firefighting that they want to pursue that as a career. And we have guys that went off and got really prestigious bachelor degrees, and then they end up becoming career firemen. And like, when you think about that, I'm sure their parents up front were disappointed. I'm sure they're very proud today, right? But when you think about that, that means that the institution that they started at, or whoever gave them their start, our department, opened a door to them that there was no going back. And that's exciting for me, because I think about a lot with National Fire Radio and the amount of travel I do and the amount of people I meet from all different walks of life, from the busiest, largest career departments to the smallest backwoods, Main Street USA volunteer departments. There's this unconditional love and passion for the fire service, and it's because of their roots. It all begins at the roots, and all it takes is one or two bad experiences, and you could take probably one of the best guys and turn them off very early. And that is why I think it's so incredibly important that the beginning steps for anybody's career, whether career or volunteer fire service, but those beginning days, months, those weeks, months, and years, those beginning days, months, weeks, and years matter. And if we're not giving them the right tools and we're not giving them the proper support, we could turn away some of the best and brightest.
Todd, I know you can get into it with like the impact your dad had for you getting into the fire department. But on Jeremy's topic, like when I joined the Ogdensburg Fire Department, still in high school, my senior year of high school, it was literally like I said, this is what I think I want to do in life. I've wanted to be a fireman since I was 5 years old. But I didn't have anyone else involved in the fire department in my family. All my friends' dads were volunteer firemen. And it was like my parents were telling me like, hey, why don't you join the volunteers and make sure you like this before you devote your life to trying to do it and getting on the job? So I joined there, and they set me on that path to where I fell in love with it, to the point I moved across the country for a job that was open because no one in the area was hiring, because they were on a hiring freeze, because the passion they gave me for the job told me this is what I want to do. If they had not invested that time in me when I was 16, maybe I go a completely different route in life.
Mm-hmm. And that's one of my concerns about today, is the amount of time we're spending on this generation, on the new kids that are coming in. Like, I know for myself, I should be spending more time tutoring and mentoring and working with the younger guys that come in. But unfortunately, my time is more limited now than it's ever been. And so now I'm really starting to juggle and think about, like, is it a detriment that I'm not hanging out after calls? Is it a detriment that I'm not there on a Saturday or Sunday morning like I used to be for guys to come down and talk shop and show them things or work with them? And so I wonder how detrimental that is becoming for this next generation. Are we not buying into them? I mean, there's a lot of this back and forth, and we can talk all about that. But like the older guys, the older other generations, the generations that came prior, have to give back. It's our duty. It's our obligation to mentor and tutor. I don't think it's happening as much as it once did. And I think that that's something we need to get back to. We need to bring attention to that and challenge our older guys, those 10, 15, 20 year guys, those 25, 50 year guys. I still need you. I need you now more than ever. And I need you to double down on the guys that are coming in, because they need tutoring and mentorship.
Well, I think that's one of the, where you see some departments are very successful in recruiting and retention. Guarantee that's because it starts from the day they start the application process through the academy, yes, all the way to their first firehouse assignments, where other departments, it's hit and miss. You know, and I'm not trying to throw a lot of smoke on any place, but I know of one, if you didn't hit the right station coming out of the academy, your career path was almost written for you, or written for a lot of guys, and they never had the opportunities that because just where they fell at coming out of the academy sometimes. So I think that's a critical component that gets lost, especially the bigger departments, where they need, this is where the opening is. Instead of looking at, hey, all our new guys are going to X amount of stations on X amount of shifts, because this is where they're going to develop the best. This is where they're going to get the best training. This is where they're going to get mentored. This is where they're going to get tutored, to use your words, Jeremy. And I think that's something that departments could do if they put forth a little more effort and work and looking at how we're going to grow this next 30 guys that just came out, this next class of 40 or whatever that number is going to be, depending on your size. Not everybody's the size of FDNY where they're graduating 225 guys at a time. And, you know, those guys are going to get those opportunities. But for a, you know, 7, 8, 10, 12 station fire department, I think they got to be really selective where they send their new guys to and who's bringing those guys up into their system. So they're getting the right upbringing and they don't up and leave in 3 years. So they get flustered with the job and it's very easy to do.
You imagine being gung-ho and excited coming out of the academy. You pull your bid, you get your bid, you go to your house, and within the first 3 days, you're like, I don't want to be a fireman anymore.
Yeah.
Like,
this is the worst. I can't imagine.
I mean, think about how much talent we might have lost along the way because of one cranky son of a gun who just didn't want to put the time in to tutor or mentor someone.
Yeah.
Could you imagine being that detrimental to an individual that you could ruin their career?
I can think of multiple people that came on our job and left, and they didn't leave the job because of the job. They left just out of pure frustration with either leadership or their supervisor at that time or their officer at the time. They just couldn't do it anymore. And I think today it's even more critical talking to guys all over the country. We're not just going to fires. These guys, and depend on your department setup, these guys are running 15, 18, 19, 20 plus calls every, and they're just getting
abused,
the hell beat out of them, and not going to fires, some of them. You know, and that, I think that'd be even tougher to swallow. You know, coming to Atlanta, being at the houses I were at early on in my career, we were ridiculous busy, but we were going to a lot of fires, so you didn't mind all the other calls.
Right.
Because you knew at some point you were going to a fire that day. So you're like, yeah, we'll take that shooting. And that. But we were going to legitimate calls, too. We weren't going to every single boo-boo call. We were going to legit, we're needed on the scene type of calls. And that seems to be a real struggle with a lot of departments. EMS really, as needed as it is, it's also one of the most abused things in our country. Yeah. And it's something that, if it doesn't get fixed, we're going to see this recruitment and a retention problem get drastically worse, I believe.
I think you're right. I think you're 100% accurate on that statement.
Well, and to give you guys, like, to what you're saying, Todd, like, I don't think it's necessarily the formal stuff. It's the people in the firehouse, the senior man. I mean, you guys met Wayne this weekend, and I've told this story on podcast before. I've wrote about it on social media. You guys met the guy, super humble. But my introduction to the fire department, once I left that volunteer fire department, that put those values in me. I go through the academy. I get an assignment that I wanted to go to, one of my top choices, and a good station in the projects. You're going to work, good calls like you're talking about. But my introduction to that firehouse was the senior man pulling me aside first thing in the morning, checking the rig off and saying, take my blood pressure, shake my blood sugar, and going through vital signs. And I'm sitting there like, damn, dude, let's talk about the fire stuff. Like, I don't want to talk about the EMS stuff. And he was like, no, because when you go somewhere else, you represent us. And I was like, okay. So that kind of hit home. And he gave me the speech I never forget, and I give every probie we get, is the academy can only pull the rock out of the dirt. It's my job to turn you into a diamond. That was his quote, and I never forgot it. But when you take that as a 19-year-old kid that I was, man, this guy with a lot of time on is telling me he's going to turn me into a diamond. Like, okay, he's going to commit his time to me. I'm going to do anything for this guy because he's willing to do it for me. And he did. I mean, he really molded my career. I ended up, because he went down a different route and did a lot of the paramedic stuff for a while. So I ended up promoting a captain before he did. But he was a driver, but he was still my senior man. Like, when I ran into a problem, I call Wayne. I call my old captains for advice, and I call Wayne. He's still that guy.
Mm-hmm.
So technically on the books, I may be senior to him. But I'm not in reality. His experience level still matters. He's been to that incident before. And guess what I can still do? 15 years later, call him on the phone and he's got the time. He's still willing to invest in me.
You know what I love about that, though? there's something just glaring me right in the eyes when you say that coming out of your mouth, is that you're still willing to ask for advice and help, that you still have mentors that you lean on. I think one of the biggest problems today is I think a lot of people feel they're alone or they're afraid to ask for help. And when it comes to leadership positions and maybe, you know, ill-equipped or undereducated or lack of experience is creating uncertain bosses. And that uncertainty now is not one of the biggest things they have to do is protect that. And the last thing they want to do is tell somebody they don't know. So, you know, they're not going to call somebody and say, hey, I'm kind of stuck on this one. And a lot of times it's a personnel issue, right? A lot of times it's not so much the firefighting aspect. It's more of the personnel and things like that, where it's like, hey, man, I'd love to run this past you because I'm torn. I don't know if I should go this way. Should I go left or should I go right on this? And I think people are afraid to have those conversations, and only the confident ones, only people that are confident in their own skills and abilities and who they are, I think, will they then ask for help or advice.
Well, uncertainty.
Go ahead. No, please.
Well, I think it goes back to the person you're asking that information from. These guys made it very clear from the start they weren't judging you.
Yes.
They were simply there to help you. So it's easy to become confident to ask them a question because they truly care to help you. I know what he cares about. He cares about the performance of the fire department and the people that came up under him. All of my mentors are the same way. Mm. But the other thing they have, and I think it goes to what you're saying, is they all had a lot of experience. They all worked in busy companies and had experience. So they didn't give me some book answer. They gave me, I've been there. This is what we did. This is what we learned. And it might not always been, hey, do this. It might have been, well, just don't do this.
Yeah, it's tested advice, right? Yeah.
We did this part this time and it didn't necessarily work out. You know, so I think it's a two-way street on that. It's not just the person being willing to ask the question. It's the relationship that was built by that senior member to give them the ability to ask the question without feeling like they're going to be judged for it. The person just wants to help develop
them. I love that. It's good.
Yeah. Let me I don't want to miss this because this could be like three podcasts in one. Everything we're just talking about, really good. But actually, I've got a hand scribble already.
That only Todd can read.
I can read. That's all that matters. So, Jeremy, I got to know.
Yeah.
And I've never asked you this question, so I thought this would be the perfect time. How did National Fire Radio start? How did this all come about? Because when I first heard about it, I was like, I'd never heard about this. It just kind of, I think I heard about it actually through you. So how did this all start?
To be honest, it was in my personal life. I alluded to it in my intro that I didn't pursue the career of fire service because I went to a 4-year college, spent 5 years there, got my degree. Listen, man, college was great. It was either I was at the bar or I was at the firehouse. And if I was at the firehouse, we were going to fire. So it was like fires or cocktails, right? And so education at the time wasn't one of my strong things. It was not one of my strong points, but in retrospect, I wish it was, and I wish I had done better, but I did pass and I did get my bachelor's degree. I came home, but during my college stay, I had the opportunity to get hired twice in a career department. I would have been 20 years old both times. I'm now 47, so I could have 27 years in a career department. And I deferred it both times because I am a huge fan of my parents and my family, and my parents were able to pay for my education, and I was fortunate for that. And as I was growing up and maturing just a little bit, I came to realize that if I didn't finish and get my bachelor's degree, I would have never went back, and it would have been money ill spent and so on. And so because of that, I decided to defer the job twice, thinking that no problem, I'll be young when I'll be 21 when I get out of college, and I got the rest of my life to get hired. I graduated, came home, moved back home. My parents opened their doors, said, come back home. In the meantime, looking for jobs, I went to work for the family business. My father owned the company. I'm second generation. I came in. I was Tommy Boy for many, many years. Tommy Boy, I was fat, drunk, and stupid. There was no way to go through life, man. And that was me. 2007, 2008 hit. The bottom dropped out of the economy. My father looked at me and said, you're either being let go or I have to let people go. Are you in or out of this business? I had to grow up very quick that night. I decided to stay with the company. And it got very real very fast. But what that did was it started to hold me accountable. Took the American Express card away, took the company car away. I wasn't calling on customers and doing lunch, golf, and cocktails. I was now sitting behind a desk answering phones and actually learning the family business. How to do it, right? So I did. All through that, I was testing. But yeah. And Anthony can attest to this, but the New Jersey system is very difficult to get hired in. I took New York City's test. I took the New Jersey Civil Service test. New Jersey is full-time to get hired. So just to get hired in New Jersey, it's a full-time job, meaning you have to uproot your life, go live in the zip code that you want to work in, and pray to God that there's not a lot of veterans or other preferential treatment on the list, because you probably won't get hired. There's only three or four large departments in New Jersey that hire maybe 50 at a time. Everybody else is onesie-twosie. So it's very, very challenging. The money is good, and it's a career here. A lot of the firemen in New Jersey that are career firemen, it's their career. It's not, they don't have to work second, third, and fourth jobs, because it does them pretty well, right? So anyway, so I thought I was going to be able to do all this. In the meantime, I'm still working for the family business. I then had to grow up in the business. And when I did, I became really damn good at it. And so I started helping grow the family business. And before you know it, it's myself, my two brothers, my father. We have seven employees. And we're growing the business at a steady pace, and things were pretty good. I started learning social media as time ticked on, and I started seeing that I could grow our family business. Mm-hmm. We could grow our business on the backs of social media. And so I started to learn how to navigate social through all that. Fast forward a couple of years later, I'm turning 40 years old. I'm really starting to feel the stresses of the world. Working for the family business, it's a 7 days a week. 12, 14 hours a day. You wear many, many hats. I'm getting burned out. My home life is getting bad. Not bad, but like there's struggle at home because I'm not home a lot. I'm working so much. I have two brothers and a father that were, they worked for the business. Obviously it's my father's business, but I really took on a lot of the leadership and management of it. And so I was just very, very busy and so on. And so I was getting burnt out. And what the big thing that made me pivot was I started to resent my father. I started looking at him going, like, I was started blaming him that, and our relationship was, we were starting to argue more at the office. We were starting to butt heads. My father's my idol. He's the strongest guy I know. He's an amazing man. He's given me everything in life, every opportunity. He's a fireman. I admired him in the firehouse from day one as a volunteer fireman and so on. And the guy is just amazing. And when I started realizing that I was having resentment towards him, and we were butting heads, I was like, I need to change course. And I couldn't just go get hired by a competitor because I would destroy him. I would break his heart. And so then around the same time, my father was looking to sell the business. And I don't know if that was because he and I were starting to argue and this and that. So he asked if I'd be interested in buying the company. I know this is long-winded, but it all goes to where I am today, right? So this part of the story in my life is part of the class that I give, the Bridging the Gap class. The first half hour of that class is my story, because it absolutely relates to why I do what I do and who I am today. Long story short, I was about to buy the business with my two brothers. I backed out at the last minute, didn't want the company. 2 months later, a competitor called. 6 months later, we sold the business to them. I work for them as a technical salesman. I do a couple different things. The point is this. It was time for me to grow up and do my own thing. I wanted to provide for myself and not carry the burden of providing everything else for everybody else. And so I looked at my wife, and I was looking at the fire service, which was an absolute passion. And I felt that I missed being a career fireman. And I felt that I wanted to do more for the fire service. And so my wife said, well, what do you want to do? And I said, I'm tired of watching the breakdown between the generations. I'm tired of watching young blame old and old blame young. And I'm tired of watching a lot of older guys. And I knew guys that were career firemen, and of course, the volunteer side. They were all leaving the job pissed off and disgruntled, and not the guys they were when they came in. And their reputations were starting to be tarnished, because the last few years of them being in the firehouse was not what they should be remembered for. And so I said, if I can capture their stories in perpetuity, I have an opportunity then to share their story and legacy to keep that alive on the channels of which people are paying attention to today. And that's social media, podcasts. And I said, you know, I grew my family business against social media. Mm-hmm. I think I could do the same thing, because nobody else is doing that in the American Fire Service. I started National Fire Radio with Rob Ridley, grabbed Sebastian Rolo, who's our producer and manages all of our tech. I said, this is what I want to do. Stories of the Senior Man. And then it just rolled on from there. And that's what it was. It was really to protect the integrity of the fire service. Tell the stories of the Senior Man. The funny thing is, Todd, like I interview regular guys and girls that love the job. I don't interview all the big names. I'm friends with all of them. I could have every single big name in the fire service, not to toot my own horn, but I could probably have them on my show. I choose not to, because those guys can go on Corley's show. They can go on some of the other ones and share their stories. But a lot of us know their stories and have read their books, and we know who they are. And I know they bring a tremendous amount of knowledge to the game. What I love is finding John Smith from Main Street USA, who's got an incredible heart and passion for the fire service and never had an opportunity to share that with anybody outside of his zip code. That's what I'm looking for.
Yeah. I love that. Absolutely. Because I've noticed, I mean, I'll see the show pop up and I'll see the name and I kind of find myself getting wrapped up in that show a little bit more sometimes, because I think you made a good point. I guess I never really thought of it that
way. He's more relatable.
Listen, hearing
John Salko's an animal. We all know it. Vincent Dunn is amazing. What their contributions have been to the fire service is so influential and massive. But a lot of people know those stories and know their writings. There are people out there that have incredible heart and love for this job. I want to give them the opportunity to talk. And in fact, I think they're more relatable. More people can relate to those people because they are those people. They're dealing with the same struggles. They're dealing with the culture, the bad leadership, the missing fires, too much EMS. Those are real that's trench talk. That's what I'm looking for.
Yeah. And I loved, and I hope everybody saw some of the pictures we posted, from this past weekend. Me and Jeremy and Anthony were all together in Alabama. And
I'm going to be doing that everywhere I go.
Very interesting desk down there, Jeremy. New. And it was so people. I hope everybody sees the pictures. I love the video of your expression when they crushed your desk at the very end of the day. That was awesome. So, yeah, I think, you know, and he did. You spoke to, you know, numerous guys there. Couple young guys that I know didn't want to be interviewed, but you talked them up a little bit and they came over and sat down with you for a little while, and guys nobody else would ever hear from, you know. So I think what National Fire Radio is doing is very interesting, and it's not just interesting, it's needed. I think to hear
100%. I do. Like, we have our finger on the pulse because I'm talking to the guys in the trenches. And if you watch me, like this past weekend at the conference, I walk up to guys and I stick my hand out and shake their hands and introduce myself. Hey, I'm Jeremy. And hey, I'm Zach. Where are you guys from? What's going on? Mm-hmm. What'd you like this weekend? Like, what are you guys dealing with? Like that to me is like how we really understand what's happening.
Yeah.
And when we talk to real people and we talk to the people that are out there doing this job every single day, career or volunteer. And that's one big thing about our show from the get. I said, if this is going to work, it is 100% truthful, zero BS. This is full transparency, full transparency. We do not embellish and we don't change anything other than who we are. Because if we're not authentic and transparent, it's not going to fly.
Shows in the way you guys do your business. It really does. It really, really does. And you guys should be. I think.
Thank you. Proud of that.
I don't want to pull it down because I got everything kind of lined up on my office, but I do have my National Fire Radio helmet shield.
You're going to bring that up.
Sorry about that.
You're going to bring that up, right?
I don't know what happened. Sure.
Can we tell that? Can we tell that story real quick? I don't want to deviate from what you want to talk about. You and I were in Texas and we were chatting, and you had been on the podcast, and all of our guests get a shield. There it is, right? All of our guests that have been on the show gets a shield. I'm a little behind right now. I said that to you the other day. I got a bunch more I got to send out. I'm a little behind. And whatchamacallit? And you're like, you were like, oh, man, I'd love to get one of those shields or something. And I said, you already have one. And you're like, no, I don't. And I go, what do you mean you don't? You're like, I never got one. And I'm like, come on. I thought you were kidding. I absolutely thought you were kidding, and then I come to find out that somehow I missed sending an appreciation to you. So I feel like an idiot. I absolutely felt like an idiot. But anyway,
field, so I'm very. That's why it's on display. Yeah. That's why I have it on display.
I'm a very appreciative and grateful person for the opportunities that have been bestowed upon me. I know a lot of it is built on the hard work and our reputation that we put into it. And a lot of people don't know who we are. And it's literally, I feel like it's organic and grassroots every single day, meeting new people and sharing with them what we do. But man, it's wild. In 6 years, I mean, we've become a household name. People know who we are. They know who I am. I mean, I don't buy a lot of beers anymore at the bar. I'll be honest with you. This weekend I did, but like, you know, it's cool. Like, it is a lot of fun to see a 24-year-old kid see me and go, "Oh, Jeremy, what's up, man?" I'm like, "What's up, man?" Like, that's fun because it's exciting for them. We're giving them what they're looking for. They want, they need. And that is the thing. I have to say, this weekend, the one thing that really stood out to me, guys, you guys did an unbelievable job down in Fairhope, Alabama. This was my second time there this year, you know, in 2 years with you guys. There were some older guys there taking the classes. I saw a couple chiefs, a couple bosses, but primarily just firefighters, and primarily I would say mid-30s and younger. Don't tell me there's a problem in the fire service with the younger generation, because what I saw this weekend reinforces everything we talk about. Those kids were ate up, ready to go, and they were. This was not basic remedial firefighting this past weekend. You guys put them through the paces, and when you look at the quality of the firefighters that came through on that training ground, we're actually in a really good place.
Yeah, I was, and I think you heard me say it when we did our closeout at the end of the day, our final little roundup was, they're challenging us. To me, when you have students like that, and for all of us that are blessed enough to get out and be able to teach, you know, in different parts of the country, I took that as a challenge last week. I was like, man, these guys are killing this. We could throw more at them. And we will. I wrote notes during the weekend and jotted some of that back down. And I kind of keep a folder of ideas and stuff all the time. I'm always added to that little folder. And a lot of those ideas come from seeing what other guys are doing. You know, I mean, you had that conversation about the snagger tool that kid showed us. I was like, okay, never would have thought to use a hose dragging tool as a firefighter down rescue device. And they brought me up through some pretty crappy conditions in a very, very, very narrow stairwell with nothing more than that little snagger tool. And we came out and he showed it. I didn't know what he brought me up with. I didn't know how I was going up the stairs that easily. And he showed me and we demoed it and we played with it. And it's like kind of like what you were saying earlier, Jeremy. Man, we can learn a lot. These young kids are on point and they're coming up with stuff, and we need to open up our eyes and our minds sometimes to some of the things that are going on out there. I'm super excited.
It's exciting.
Oh, it's very exciting.
It's exciting.
And you know, that kind of from your travels, and this is kind of a question I wanted to kind of answer too. What are you seeing as areas that we need to really improve on when it comes to training? From just, you know, from things you're getting either from what you saw this weekend or I know you go, I mean, you're going to be at FDIC in a couple weeks and all those things. Where do you see we can get better at? And just in your opinion, I'll ask Rohit the same thing next.
I think a couple things, but the two main things that stand out to me is one, the experience. Mm-hmm. Right. And I mean experience, not like, oh, I've been doing this forever. I mean experience of a lot of these students, firefighters, come to training on their own dime. You better deliver. You better give them an experience that matters. That means understanding the type of firefighters they are. Get a sense of the pulse of the training ground to know that your training is representing what they need and want. Right. If you're teaching basics and they're beyond basic, you better pick up your game that day and add something more to the class. Right. If you're going more advanced and they're more scaled back, then you better be able to pivot and really read the room or read the training ground to deliver training that is representative of what they want. And then don't provide a lot of downtime and don't give them a lot of opportunity to wander away. You got to keep them engaged and you need to give them an experience. People spend a lot of money and they take their hard-earned time away from their families, maybe away from the job, away from their second job. And they're typically spending their own money. Maybe the department's willing to pay, but most aren't. You got to give them an experience that matters. I think that's important. And then I think the other thing too is they want to learn from people that mm-hmm. have been there. There's a lot of theory out there, and I know. I mean, this is, and you guys know this, but I watch it, and you can really tell where the message is coming from and how it's being delivered from where mm-hmm. and who they are. Like, you can really break down pretty quick, and I know you guys can, and I know, in fact, we had some conversations this weekend about, like, you know, like, and the thing with that is this. They deserve the best. We need to give them the best. If you have a training company or you're going to put on a training weekend, you better know what you're doing and you better be teaching fact. You better be teaching experience. If you're learning something from somewhere else and making it yours and you haven't done it, then you've never done it. It's just theory. I can show you 1,000 different ways to do something, but if I've never done it myself under conditions that matter, it's theory. It's not yours. You can't go teach it. And I think that that's something that's crazy, because something I did want to talk about, and we're going to get to it, I hope, if we don't run out of time, but we talked about, I think the do, we need people to do. I think we're speeding up the process and people are cheating the system by speeding up the process. And so, you know, own a training company after your 20th year type of thing. You know what I mean? Like, I think that matters, though, because it comes across in the delivery. And we have a responsibility to these students, to these firefighters that spend their time and money on giving it to us so we can educate. We better be educating from a point of knowing. I think that's
important. I 100% agree with you. And I think one of the other things that we've had conversations about, and I know me and Rove had conversations about, teaching a skill set. I think anybody can do. I think you can teach skill set, you know, set gap force. Everybody in the country teach it. It's on everybody's forceful edge door. And I agree with that, with the basic premise. But what one of the things I know we talked about, what if that doesn't work on that door? Who's going to show you past set gap force? Yeah, now what? And you know, I take so many of these opportunities and listen and watch how other instructors are interacting. I think that if you've never seen Brian Brush interact with students, that's kind of like my gold standard now, because I've got to be around Brian enough. I think he is the gold standard. He knows how to interact with everybody, and he knows how to push the buttons the right way. It's fun to watch, and I've learned a lot watching him. And then our buddy Mickey Farrell this past week, just watching Mickey, who comes from this big city, but he has that volunteer background. And he's able to interact with guys that were brand new into the service all the way to some more senior guys there this weekend. So there's a lot of times that I'm not teaching, and I'm just sitting back watching, observing, going, man, I really want to be as good as Brian. I really want to be as good as Mickey or as good as Ray. And watching how they interact with people, I think, is a big deal with their experience and the ability to interact with people is big. It's kind of that. I want to make sure I don't miss this opportunity with you, Anthony. Kind of the same question I asked Jeremy just a second ago.
Yeah, so I'm gonna go in the same direction you guys did and then kind of completely spin too. So with what you're saying, I agree 100%. I've posted on it a lot on social media. Like, if you didn't do it, it's your theory. You're talking about what you think you'll do. If you should have done it at Real Fires to teach it. And I've had somebody question it because it was taken wrong. So I think it is important to clarify what we're saying while we say this. We're not talking about inner department. When you're doing training within your company, the level of experience you have is what you have. You have to do the best you can with what you can. So what we're talking about is that outside training. So I think that is two different worlds. And I have seen people confuse that message before of, and they specifically talk, you're going to like this, Todd, said it with standpipes. But they were like, if we're teaching it, but none of us have made a fire hooked up to a standpipe, what are we supposed to do? Not teach it. And I was like, no, rely on your senior guys. But if you were to teach that same topic at a conference, you should have hooked up to a standpipe before. And me and Mickey have had this conversation a few times, and we actually talked to Bob Pressler about it this weekend, and he was laughing, saying the same thing. And we were talking about it with rescues. Like, there's 9 million ways to drag somebody. There's 9 million ways of, do you go this way or this way, head first or feet first, or this and this. And we were all like, in our real life experiences of getting people out of houses, it was get them and go. I mean, you did what you could. The situation didn't always allow for some perfect drag. We practiced on an engine bay floor. It was hoarding conditions, and you're trying to clear paths and go up over people. We had one with a guy with special needs with CO on board, and he fought us tooth and nail. You guys met Jonathan this weekend. He showed you his bullet, Jeremy. And the dude had basically undressed him by the time we got out the door with him because he had so much CO on board plus special needs. You got to be able to take that experience and make it real. And I think that's the part where when we come into the conferences, that experience comes of, man, I like, okay, this is a drag, but you might not do it. The reality is you might just grab them and do whatever you can to get them out. Don't focus on this drag, this one skill. The experience to say, look, reality says this is what is probably going to happen. Be prepared for this. This is a great skill. You might not be able to do it. You might have to go back to just grab them and go any way you can. But the other thing I want to spin this to is if you're an officer, if you're a senior man, constantly evaluate your people. Put them in their discomfort zone, not their comfort zone. Make them do what they don't always do in training. That was my experience I get with this class because it's so close to us. My whole crew was in that class. They were either helping teach it or they were students in it. So I got to see them do stuff. We are engines. We're an engine company, and our department has dedicated engines and trucks. They're very good at engine work. They don't get the opportunity very often to do a VES, to do truck work, to do a Mayday like we had with you, Todd. I mean, we don't make a lot of Maydays, luckily. I mean, I've had a few, but it's not something we do all the time. Like, they stretch a line. Like, they work through hoarding conditions with a line and put a fire out. They know what to do there like this. So when we put them in that discomfort zone instead of their comfort zone, I got to see what challenged them that we can go back and work on. I also got to be delighted with the surprises of, man, they did good with that. You know what it is as an officer for somebody? When you see a young guy come up and someone like Todd, who's one of your mentors, says, work with this guy. He needs to promote. He's ready. He did a great job.
Yeah,
he did a great job. But now you know where to spin that with him. Okay, mm-hmm. He's got this part. Let's focus on this.
Yeah.
So I think two folds with it is what we're talking about. But also, if you're that inner department, inner company, is to get those guys out of their comfort zone and see where they're at. See where they're going to be at and what they need to work on. See when they're ready to promote and get them ready for it. Don't do them a disservice by letting them promote and not prepare them to be successful there. If they promote and have zero success because they didn't know what to do and they weren't prepared, that's on you. That's not on them. There's only so much on them because they have no experience with it. You have experience with that role, so you should be preparing them. That's another place where I was lucky. My captain, when I started promoting, he was very into training. He was a big New York City buff. But when I started getting ready to promote, he started doing drills where he moved me into different positions. And he made me uncomfortable so he could teach me how to make the decisions he was making by teaching me through his experience. He didn't throw me to the wolves and say, hey, you got it. You got promoted. He took pride in that I would have success once I got there. And I think that's very important.
I couldn't agree with you more. Now, that kind of – I want to kind of go back to Jeremy on that just for the mere fact of how much you've gotten to do and how much you're on the road now where you see what areas do you see as being a weakness right now then, Jeremy, and where we as the fire service really need to focus a little more energy on?
I think we kind of talked about it this weekend a little bit, and it made for a really good conversation, a lot of back and forth with the different people I was talking to. But one of the things that I'm seeing more and more of, and it's not just on my home turf, but it's also across the board. When I go out and talk to firefighters all over the country, whether on the podcast or conferences or, you know, just we visit departments, we do all the different things. There's not a lot of conversation about tactics and strategies. It's mostly about leadership and culture, where we should be focusing on firefighting. We're dealing with the fighting. I'm going to, you know what? I'm copy, I'm right now. With that. I've never said that before. It's pretty good. I'm claiming that. But the thing is like everybody's looking for advice on the things that we're dealing with every single day, because we might not be going to fires every single day, and where our skill set should be sharp and we should be honing our skill set on the fire ground. We're more worried about poor leadership and culture. And so that's where like National Fire Radio really has gone, because like I said, like, I'm not here to teach you how to throw a ladder and stretch a line. That's not my strong suit. I'm not a guy that has the ability to go do that. Can I do it myself? Yes. Am I proficient? Yes. But I'm not going to go out there and start teaching it outside of my own fire department, right? I know my lane. Our lane is culture. Our lane is, you know, leadership. So many people today seek out information about leadership. Years ago, nobody asked how to be a leader, right? Like, and now today there's unlimited books and articles and classes and podcasts all about leadership. I think it's great, but I think it's people cheating the system. It's people that are speeding up the process. To become a good leader takes work in the trenches. You have to be on the battlefield before you can be in the command post. And so like that matters. And so we're trying to speed up and find, and oh, fires are down and this and that bullshit. Like, you know, there's places where fires are up. And in Frank, I don't know if we're allowed to swear on fire engineering, but frankly, you know, I don't buy that argument, because we're still going, there's shops that are going out the door 20 times a day. Volunteer departments are doing more responses than they've ever done. So call volume is trending upward. So I don't know how we can argue that, because leadership is required on all types of calls, not just fires. So I think we're speeding up the process, and, you know, and so on. So one of the things that I found, Todd, and we talked about this, Anthony, you were in on this conversation too a little bit, is what I call the validation fire service. We have leaders today that are asking for permission to do. Now, we could go down 1,000 different roads with this, and I'd love your ideas on this too. But this permission fire department, this validation fire department, nowadays we're asking if it's okay to do it informally, instead of just saying like, "Do you want me to go do this?" We're like, "We're up on the second floor now. We're stretching a line. We're going to be putting water. Go do." Like early in my career, we just did it. We didn't tell everybody about it. We just went. And went and did the job. And now it's almost like we're asking permission. Like, "Hey, chief, we're doing this, we're doing this, we're doing this." And then the next question should be, "Is that okay?" But they won't say that. So the chief will then get on the radio and go, "Okay, understood. Go get them, boys." Like, come on. What are we doing? But it's the seeking of validation. It's people today that are making decisions on the fire ground or within their companies might not have the confidence and skill set that our leaders once had. And so now they're looking for that pat on the butt and a little bit of validation from someone else, just so they know they're doing it right. And I think that's dangerous. And I think that we're getting to a place now where we can't rely on that. And listen, man, people now more than ever want to be told what to do. It's crazy. It's absolutely crazy, but we are a permission society. I mean, now more than ever, government is telling us what to do, right? We used to be as free as we wanted to make the choices. We have free will. But in the fire service today, it's almost like we have helicopter parents, right? We have helicopter officers who are hovering and not letting their people work. One of the biggest things for me, let your people work. But the problem is if the officer, the boss, the chief, the administration is not confident in their own skills and abilities, they'll never, ever let people work, because they're worried they're going to get shown up. They're worried that they're going to be held to something that they can't answer. You got all these young kids that went to training this past weekend with the three of us. All these young kids, excited, motivated. You know how many of those kids are going to go back to their firehouses and stay quiet because nobody else wants to hear about it or know about it? Or they're going to be told, like, we don't give a crap that you went away this weekend. You know why? It's because those people are now threatened. I told a couple kids that this weekend when I was talking to them because they were telling me that exact story. And I looked at them and I said, your guys at home are threatened by your wants and needs. You need training because you want it. Mm-hmm. You thirst for it. Now that you have it, you should go home and share it. But they're going to stymie that. They're going to stymie your growth because they're intimidated and threatened by you. And they've been there 20 years longer than you. That's a problem. Years ago, we boosted people up. Show me what you learned. What something different? A little bit of a different forceful entry technique? Hold the Halley in this way? Like something Bob Pressler said this weekend that stuck with me. Like, I was like, I never heard that before. It's,
I know exactly where you're going. It's just,
right? So, like, and that's my point. We should be boosting one another up, and we should all be starving for more because that's how we make this job good. That's how we push this job forward. And when we don't encourage one another to share, and we don't trust in one another to give, and we have leaders that don't let their people work, and we have young kids that are excited that get oppressed by bad boss, like, it's a recipe for disaster.
One of the
recipes
we need to see, as much as I love having the firemen there, obviously, I love when we have company officers on the, doing the hardcore training. Everybody that ever goes up to Jim's place at FDTN comes back with a whole new understanding. There's no asking permission there. It's definitely all do and we'll figure it out. During our drills, we don't tell them anything. I don't care how they get the job done, but we want the job done. And then we're going to talk about it. And it is such a learning experience for the instructors and for the students to hot wash after every scenario with everybody. So everybody's learning something and what we learn from each other and what worked, what didn't work. Let's try this next time. And that gives us that where we don't have to look for validation or permission, I think. But I was telling this story to you and I think some other guys when I was just recently in Smithfield, North Carolina, and the fire chief was at the training site throwing pallets, building sets, watching his companies, learning what they were learning, asking the same question his guys were. He wasn't worried about being the chief. He was more worried about his people being great at this job. And when we change that mindset, we're always on this culture kick, like you just said, we need to change the culture of our officers first. And that's going to change the culture of the fire service. We got, obviously, we need to worry about our young guys. But, man, 22-year-old kids come back. When my guys came back to class, the first thing they had to do was show us what they learned. And we'd be love like, it. Man, that is awesome. Or, oh, let's try this. And then we would start tweaking it and find out what worked best for us. And
doesn't work.
I've seen that trend.
Like, it's cool that you did it this weekend and you brought it home and we tested it on our own turf. See, that's part of the other problem, too. It's like whatever people see, they're like, oh, let's do this. And it's like, but we haven't tested it yet. Let's put it through the paces here. And then they do. And then all of a sudden it's like, well, I don't think it's going to work that great here, but I think we could tweak this that we do. Great job. Now that kid's empowered. The guys are excited. It's a winning combination.
Yeah, it wasn't some whiz kid sitting at behind a desk that came up with the way we currently do forceful entry. That came from guys trying and failing thousands of times and sharing that. And then I share with you, and then you go, well, shit, maybe if I just turn the tool this way a little bit. And then the next guy comes up and go, well, if you short stroke it this way or you do it this way, that's how we learn. And we've got to, I think that if we're going to promote a culture, we need to promote the learning culture and the sharing culture.
Amen.
And and I agree with you 100%. The biggest request I get is about officer development because these poor guys don't know either. They've been promoted. I've been here 5 years. I took a test. I read 4 books, and now I'm a boss. And they call me now. What do I do? Because they've never been really shown how to be a boss, except what Fire Officer One told them to do. They can do a budget. They can doodle out a damn map of Walmart for you. But there's a big difference in developing a team and versus doing a budget or a Google Map or whatever they do in Leadership One now or Fire Officer One.
Maybe we should say in leadership classes and officer development courses, if you're more worried about a paper cut than slamming your finger between a flathead and a Halligan, you need to refocus where you need to be, right?
And to double down on what both of you guys are saying is, and this is just my personal experience, but to what you're talking about, Jeremy, like I agree 100% that a lot more radio traffic of people maybe not asking the question, but just putting out there, hey, we're going to do this.
Yep.
And my personal experience with it is like, if I tell my guys to go do something, I'm checking it off. It's done. You'll let me know you can't do it. I've checked it off as done, and you'll let me know when it's done and you're ready for something else. And that's not because of me. That's because just I was trained that way, because I came up on an area of the city that was getting a lot of work with very senior bosses. So they had been there, done that a million times, and all of them would do the same thing. When they heard people do that on the radio, they would look at you and say, don't ever do that. If I tell you to do this, you do it and you let me know if you can't. Otherwise, let me know when it's done in these circumstances. I remember a guy telling me like, hey, if I send you to the roof, don't tell me the hole's cut. I don't need to know it's cut. I'm going to know and I'm going to be able to tell, but I'm considering it done because I told you to do it. Only let me know if you couldn't. So my understanding was always, because that's all I knew coming up was those bosses. So I didn't know any other way. But also to like what Todd's saying with a chief at the training site, I think it goes again both ways. It's a two-way street. From my experience, this is 2 years in a row. You've been down here for this class and you've seen it both times. We've had senior people come to the class just to support the members in it. Last year was 2 30-plus-year captains, 1 6 months from retiring, just to show the guys, the young kids there, they know the power of their influence. They know how much influence they have behind their name. They don't flaunt it. They don't talk about it, but they both know the power they have on the fire department and what them being there meant. This year, we had an assistant chief, second or third in charge of the city, show up. And he got to the point he couldn't take it no more watching. He went and got his gear and went in the burn building with his members. To me, it's two-way street. It doesn't just tell him where his people are and where he needs to work on them to get him where they want him. Those guys know their chief stands for them. He's one of them. He'll sweat with them. He'll bleed with them. He'll work with them. And he truly supports them. It's two ways. It's not just figure out what they need. You're gaining love from your people. They'll go and do anything you need because you've shown love to them. You've shown support to them. You care about them. You care that they get better. You care about the job. You care about them. It goes both ways. There's a lot of benefits to it, not just learning, oh, this is where my guys are at. They're really good at this. We need to up the training on this. No, it's that emotional now they have for you because, man, this guy's with me. I'll ride with him anywhere. I mean, I had a district chief. Not everybody liked him. I thought he was great. I loved working for him. I would do anything Albert Cross ever asked. If that man said, hell's burning, go put it out. If he's going, I'm going. I mean, I would do anything he asked. And our whole crew felt that way. But it was because when we would train, he would go down there with us. He still did the old school drills the way they used to. He didn't necessarily do it the way it was done now. He ran the same number of drills. He did all this. He required, and he told you, it was standards. When it comes to performance, your feelings don't matter. You have to perform. The standard is the only measuring stick I have. If you don't perform, we have a problem. But he took up for his people too. If you got in trouble and you didn't necessarily deserve it, maybe a little bit, but not all of it, he took up for you and made sure what you got was fair. And if you knew he was willing to do that for you and you had a fire, he was going to be, it was the most comforting feeling I had when he was in command. He was the most senior man on our job. There was 42 years watching that fire. And when our second chief got there, typically we got District 3. He was the second most senior man on the job, same class. We had 84 years of experience on our job, standing outside in command watching it. There wasn't a limit I wouldn't push because of what experience there was. And he wasn't a guy to pull you out of a fire, ever. I mean, he expected you to put it out. And
he let his people work.
And he would get on the radio, give you the, hey, man, you got 60 seconds. If I don't see improvement, I'm pulling you out. But when he said get out, we unassed the building. because we knew. We knew something he saw was that bad because he didn't ever react that way. And I used the radio traffic of a mayday we had, and we were the RIT team for this fire, and you hear him just screaming in the radio. This is a 40-plus year guy. And I tell people, like, listen to the radio. Do you think he ever talks like that on the radio? Screaming, saying, get out of the front of the building? No, he never talked like that. That tells you how bad those conditions got, that he had to find a way to get control back of this incident. But when he would say things, he trusted you because he drilled with you.
Yes.
He would come in there and be your brother, but on the drill field, he was your chief. At a fire, he was your chief. And he had a standard, and you were going to be held to it. And if you didn't, we can be buddies tomorrow, but it worked. It's about this standard. He never let anything of the generation talk matter. Anything of the changing of that matter. He relied on standards, and we were from a different generation. He hired on before I was born. We were obviously from a different generation. It didn't matter. I would do anything that man asked because he showed he supported us. He cared about us. He told us the standard and told us to meet it or there would be a problem. And we respected that. So I think it does go both ways.
100%. I want to make sure because I didn't want to we're in that time range, but I wanted to ask Jeremy this real quick too. Where do you kind of see, first off, the fire service, where we're at, where do you see us kind of getting to in the next couple of years, and where do you see National Fire Radio playing a role in all this now? With the outreach and, you know, social media is not going away. If anything, it's going to keep getting bigger. You won't be on TikTok much longer, I guess. But other than that, you'll be good.
Maybe not.
There'll be a new version of TikTok. They'll just name it Talk Tick or something. But where do you kind of see National Fire Radio and the fire service at the next several
years? I'm excited, man. I'm excited. And I'll tell you why. What we saw this weekend used to be a subculture. I think it's now the culture.
Love that.
I think we are getting to a point where in the last 10 years or so, with a lot of these breakout micro conferences, the ability to spread out across the country and not just have one or two or three mainlining conferences, but multiple micro conferences all over the country that has become more accessible. What that has done is opened up the ability for people in their locals to go find good training locally at an affordable price. And I think what's super exciting about that is it was once a subculture of go-getters that guys talked in back rooms and secret handshakes and, you know, come this weekend, right? And, you know, we're going to do this and we're going to do that. And then fast forward to where we are today in 2024, that subculture is the culture now. You find that people want to be better. And this is the upside of social media. You only know what you know. And now that we have content platforms out there that are sharing how everybody is doing it, you get to choose for yourself which road you want to go down. The road of the subculture is much more exciting and appealing to most. And so that's why it's becoming the culture today. It's because of it's being built on the back of channels like National Fire Radio. It's being built on the back of social media where people can really learn and understand what is happening in the American Fire Service across the country and not just their zip code. And so that is super exciting for me. And that is why I'm super protective and proud of what we do. We're sharing those tips, tricks, and hacks. We're showing how it's done. We're showing where the knowledge is coming from. People have the ability now more than ever to put on their own content. And we can vet them. We can vet them very quickly on social media. I think even more so now than ever before. Because as they put content out, we can judge for ourselves whether it's valid or not. And I think that that's super important. And those that are not transparent and those that aren't here for the right reasons or bring value, they fade away. Because it's a long game. The fire service is a long game. Just like I talked about, don't quicken the process, right? Don't rush the process. It's the same thing with educating and being a leader in the fire service. It's the same thing I said before. It takes 20 years before you can start your own training company. Like, there's certain things that we require in the fire service for you to have to be able to do. That still matters. That framework and foundation matters. And so everything being scaled the way it is today, I am more excited today than I've ever been. I think there's more opportunity today. And sometimes more opportunity is not better, but sometimes people never had opportunities. Now we give them opportunities. People were in Alabama this past weekend from Denver, Colorado, or the Denver area, I should say. They were there because they heard about this class through social media and wanted to go and see it. That would have never happened before.
No.
And that's exciting. So the subculture is the culture. Get on or get out of the way.
Yeah.
That's what I say.
I love it.
Get on or get out of the way.
Absolutely. Love it.
I don't care. Listen, if it's not for you, if it's not for you, like I talk about in my class, we have winners and losers. Any profession, there's winners and losers. Double down on your winners. Give them everything they need to succeed. That is why this subculture is now the culture. And you can either get on board with the culture, better yourself, which betters the department, which betters the delivery of services to the people that you're sworn to protect. Get on board. And if you're not, at least get the hell out of the way. Don't prevent us from growing. Don't prevent this movement. And if anything, look in the mirror, hold yourself accountable, pick up your bootstraps, and join us. Because it's freaking fun, man.
I love that. I absolutely love that. And I see where some departments are just heads and shoulders above others. Same kind of department, same size. And literally mile or two apart, and you're like, how are these guys? Because those guys are bought in. They understand the mission. And, you know, it's real simple to have a lot of cool T-shirts and a lot of cool slogans about them and the mission first and all those really neat things. But, man, you also got to live that, too. You got to actually be willing to go out and show that you do support, that you do believe the mission by making yourself better. And there's something new coming every day.
You have to do the work. That is it. Like you can say you want to, you can think you do, but until you do, and I said that earlier, when everything is theory, Anthony backed it up. Anthony said it's theory unless you've done it. If you want to do, go do. That's it. It takes work. You have to put the work in. Nothing comes easy. Don't rush the process. Don't rush the process, because I promise you the process is going to pay you back 100 times over if you do it right. I am grateful for the friendships and relationships that I've made through National Fire Radio. If you told me 7 years ago that I would be friends with some of the biggest and best in the American Fire Service, people that were pillars in my career, that I read their articles, I read their books, I watched the movies and the videos, I did all that. Those are people now that are on my speed dial. The reason why I get to do what I do is because I put in the work. Go do the work. I promise you, it will reward you.
Definitely. I could not agree more. And just so you, how we typically do our wrap is that we do kind of a final thought. You know, myself and Anthony, and obviously you being the most important tonight, kind of give your final thoughts of anything you want to give your final thoughts on. And we'll go from there. So I'm going to start with Mr. Rowett tonight. I usually start with Captain Rowett, give kind of your final thoughts tonight. I mean, what's funny is I was writing down notes for tonight's show, and we've literally gone about every other direction but what I wrote down. So that's even better. I like that too. I'm glad I didn't send it out. I kind of went over it with Jeremy, and we were okay, but we also went down some really good rabbit holes. I love that we were on point with some stuff and got a lot of information out in a short period of time. So hopefully we'll be able to have you back, Jeremy. I think we could definitely do some really other cool things. So final thoughts there, Captain Rowett.
So first off, Jeremy, thank you for your time and coming on the show. And I'm going to give you a little bit of tidbit of information only 4 people know currently. We have Todd knows, Mickey knows, and Pettis knows. We don't have locked-in dates for your calendar yet, but we have tentative dates for Fairhope next year of March 8th and 9th. So go ahead and look for those. We'll get them locked in. But right now, tentatively, It is a go, and that's what we're looking at, is the same weekend we had this year. But my final thoughts, it's kind of building off of some stuff we talked about, but a little bit separate. And I think it's important. I was talking about a lot of the senior guys and the impact they had. And I'm going to use an example of what we had this weekend. Just sitting at dinner, sitting at the bar, who we were talking to. Go out and find those senior members and learn where we come from. Not even at least your own fire department. Know where you come from. Know where those traditions come from. Understand us. Not just, hey, this is what we do. Understand us, understand where we come from, and then honor it. Never disservice those guys that came and built it. I mean, how much did we learn? Me and Jeremy talked about it. Just sitting at the table talking to Bob Pressler. And it wasn't always look, if you got to force a door in the dark, do it this way. You'll never hit at anybody. It wasn't just those tips. Just the reality of talking to him, and we're talking about the documentaries he was a part of in the 90s. And you bring up, hey, you said, yeah, you were talking about turtling up, and he goes, boom, that quick. Oh, that fire was at this intersection. We had this, and tells you the whole story. It's still there. The man still loves the job. But what did we learn from that? We learned to act, not just the context of what he said in the documentary. He gave us all the lessons learned of that fire. And moving forward, he gave us more, because that built into the next story and the next story. Just sit back and learn from those guys. There's so much they have to offer us. And if you don't go get it, it's going to be lost. Don't let it get lost. That's not how we honor the guys that built what we were gifted. So go out, seek them out. If you're on a young department, a new department, and you don't have those senior guys, go find them somewhere else. They still, our traditions came from somewhere. Our history came from somewhere. Find those guys and learn it. Learn about where we came from. Learn the stories behind why we do what we do. So it's easier to make those decisions, because you actually understand where they fit in the equation of the whole fire ground. It's not an every time thing. That was under these conditions. And then you're prepared for that situation. At least you can't replace experience, but you can do the best you can to prepare for it, which is training and learning those stories. We always talk about it, the kitchen table. How much is learned at the kitchen table just by the old guys telling those stories? And I'm going to repeat something Mickey says all the time, because he's a good friend of ours. Let the old guys tell the story the 35th time, because one day they won't be there to say it. 100%. And one of my best friends, you guys 100%. Know him, McAvoy, that comes out to the class. Man, he's the truck captain of my firehouse. He's a good friend of mine. We make fun of him. We say we numbered his stories because he tells the same story so many times. To the point now he'll start and go, I know, number 72. Never cut him off. Let him tell that story. Because maybe that new kid sitting at the table hasn't heard it, and maybe he learns a lesson from it. So that's my closing. Jeremy, thanks that. Again for your time, both this week, this past
thanks
weekend,
for having me.
And
it was awesome.
And then go ahead and look at those dates. We'll let you know when they're final, but now everybody knows.
Will do. I'd be honored to make the trip again, yeah, for
you know
sure.
You're always invited, so.
Thank I'm going to give a short down and dirty of mine, kind of a shameless plug of what I've got coming up for FDIC. Instructors, you've got to test past the skill set. If we don't test our firefighters' minds, our officers' minds, our chief officers' minds, they're never going to adapt, because not everything is always the perfect cross-lay stretch. Not everything is going to be the simple door force. Not every fire is going to be smooth. But if we're not allowing our firefighters to make decisions, we're not allowing our officers to make the hard calls, if we're not training them for that moment, we will remain just, and I love how Jeremy says this, that validation fire department. There are too many fires that go on that there's not time to get permission to make that next push or check that next room or force that next door or cut that next hole. So we've got to do a better job on our end and stop expecting our firefighters to be robots and asking for permission. And that's some of the stuff we'll be talking about in that class, about building that training culture. We got to also build the mindset about training, but build the mindset to get them ready for that very next fire. So we don't know when it's coming. We better make sure they're ready, because not everything is the bedroom 25 gallons of water later and we're out in the parking lot slapping hands. We've got to be better than that. So test your people so we can get away from what Jeremy was talking about, the validation or the permission fire department, the permission officer. Let's let them work and let them think we've got to build that at the training level and on the fire ground at the same time. Jeremy, your final thoughts, my brother.
It's your story. It's your story. Your career is your story. Make what you want of it. Remember a couple things. One, have fun. We're supposed to enjoy it, right? It's a job. Career volunteer. But if you're not smiling and you're not enjoying the company that you keep, you're not pushing yourself to be bigger and better every single day. And it could be just a simple little thing. It doesn't need to be gigantic steps in your career every day. It could just be little things. Those little things all add up into big things. Take chances and believe in yourself. I mean, it's your story. Hold yourself accountable for it and don't live vicariously through other people. Make it your story and be a standout, because we need standouts. And I really think the fire service inherently builds incredible people. You might not be in the busiest shop. You might not go to all the fires, but you could still be a rock star in this business. And I think that, you know, it's okay, especially now more than ever with the validation fire department, with the permission set fire department, right? Like, take some chances. Believe in yourself. I mean, resiliency, you'll fall down. You're going to get a black guy. You're not going to make all the right decisions on the fire ground, in the firehouse, in your personal life. Nobody cares about that. What they do care about is how you pick yourself back up and go. This is your career. Make of it what you will. Put yourself to the test, because if you're not testing yourself, you're just going through the paces. And what fun is that?
No fun.
So anyway, be in love with the fire service, man, because it's done me well. I know it's done you two very well. And I mean that in just the fulfillment side. And that's what I'm talking about. So I challenge you, if you're in a rut, we all get in ruts. You'll get out of it. Push yourself to get out of it and just make your own story, because it's yours.
Not to go off of that subject, but when you said that, I was like, oh man, I met y'all five times this week. I had guys walk up to me and say almost the identical thing. Man, I was so glad I got out this weekend. I got so much out of this. But the biggest thing that took away, it got them back engaged. Simply being around all the firefighters that were into the training and picking up this, and not just from us, picking up things from other students and talking to the other firefighters that were there, how it just reamplified them. And they needed that. And I hear that a lot of places we go to, how much it means to them to kind of get almost re-immersed, reborn back into the job. So I love how you close that out. But I mean, oh my God, that's a whole other, we could go on another 45 minutes on that.
Todd, it's almost like I do this, right?
But that's so awesome.
I just want to say this. It's an absolute honor to be on this platform. It's a lot of fun to work with you guys. And I'm grateful for our friendships. And so on. But I just think that things like this is what push the job forward. And as long as people are willing to put the time in to share their thoughts, ideas, and experiences, we're going to be in a good place. And so thank you to have me. Thank you for inviting me on. It was an absolute honor.
Thank you. I know you've had a real busy day, Jeremy. Go spend the rest of the evening with your lovely family. And we will definitely be talking to you soon. Thank you, everybody listening. We'll be getting that information. We'll get the show out on social media. And we'll be advertising our next one. I'm not in charge. Anthony is. So I just dial in when Anthony tells me to dial in. That's all I know. That's what I do.
They tell me when to dial in.
We appreciate it. And we're out.